I'm Neve Barker in London. Many young European and American Jews are raised to believe that their Jewish identity is contingent on their unflinching support for the state of Israel. Well, that identity is now very much in crisis as many young Jews watch in graphic detail the state of Israel's onslaught in Gaza and the worsening treatment of Palestinians in the occupied West Bank.
I don't think I realized the extent to which what I would come to see on the ground would really shock me and horrify me.
A new documentary called Israelism casts a critical eye on the growing generational divide among American Jews on the question of Palestine, with many young people increasingly becoming critical of Israel and less supportive of Zionism.
You see what non-democracy looks like.
What we've been told is that the only way that Jews can be safe is if Palestinians are not safe. The more I learned about that, the more I came to see that as a lie.
It's a film by Jewish people about Jewish people and the state of Israel, about the fight for the freedom and equality of Palestinians while also fighting anti-Semitism. But it's faced multiple attempts by some Jewish groups to have its screenings cancelled. Join me over the next half hour as the film's main protagonist, Simone Zimmerman, and producer, co-director, Erin Axelman, talk to Al Jazeera. Simone Zimmerman, Erin Axelman, welcome to Talk to Al Jazeera. Firstly, congratulations, both of you, on the film. I was at the premiere here in London. There was a queue all the way down the street. Erin, if I can start with you and ask you what you were hoping to achieve with this film.
We're really trying to show a mirror to our own community, and really show our community, the progressive American Jewish community, that we are not fringe, that we are not a tiny proportion of American Jews. We are actually a massive proportion, and that our views are incredibly humane and are actually aligned with the Jewish values of social justice and fighting oppression. So I think we're really trying to show our own community that we're not alone, that we're not fringe, that we are just as Jewish as anybody else. And in fact, we are doing this work because of our Jewish history and because of our Jewish values. And I think we're also trying to show the rest of the world, especially Palestinians, that we are behind you, that we are with you. And that, again, to fight for Jewish values means to fight for Palestinian freedom in this moment. And lastly, I think our film is also trying to help explain to the wider world both why American Jews historically have been so pro-Israel. I think there's a lot of confusion about why this very progressive community, the American Jewish community, has historically been so unconditionally pro-Israel. And I think our film helps explain that. And I think our film also helps show how and why the massive transformations in our community are occurring as more and more American Jews come into contact with Palestinians and Palestinian narratives and realize that we actually empathize with them and sympathize with them intensely.
And Simone, as the main protagonist, or one of the main protagonists in this film, how would you describe the journey that you went on? Because it was very much a personal one.
It was one of shattering. I mean, I was absolutely heartbroken when I first encountered the Palestinian reality. You know, at first it began for me as a series of questions. Like, I was hearing things on my college campus that just didn't comport with the worldview that I was raised with. And there's only so long that you can hear these testimonies that challenge your worldview. And I think everybody has a choice, which is either to go deeper into denial, to close yourself off from reality, or to face it head on and to say, what does this actually mean? And what does this mean about the narrative that I currently hold? And it forced me to do a lot of deep reevaluation.
And how reflective is your personal reevaluation of many other Jews in Europe and America when it comes to how they view Israel?
I mean, I think my story is not unique. It's, as Erin said, this is the story of a generation. I meet people at every single screening who, you know, come up and say, I just spent the last hour and a half sobbing. This story spoke so deeply to my own experience. We hear from people who say this has enabled them to have the painful conversations with their loved ones and with people in their communities. And yeah, we know that this is not actually a unique experience in the Jewish community. This is something that's happening to people all around the world.
Erin, at least the first pretty much half of the film almost sort of went into huge detail about the whole indoctrination process of particularly American Jews into being loyal to the state of Israel. But what your film seems to want to do is reclaim that sense of Jewish identity, as you suggested. How is it possible to do that without conflating being Jewish with the actions of the Israeli government?
Yeah, I think, you know, as you talked about, you know, AIPAC and many other kind of pro-Israel organizations have really tried to tie Jewishness to...
AIPAC being the pro-Zionist Jewish lobby in the U.S.
And a lot of these kind of major pro-Israel organizations in America have really tried to tie Jewishness and Judaism to Israel and say that they are essentially the same. Someone in our film even says, Israel is Judaism and Judaism is Israel. And we interviewed many people on the center and the center right, and many people have told us that they really believe that these two things are linked. And I think what we're trying to do is show that ruling over millions of people without basic rights for decades and decades and decades is not Judaism. There's nothing Jewish about it, as someone actually said recently in one of our screenings. And actually, many American Jews support Israel, or think they support Israel, because they think Israel is aligned with their values. We often hear narratives of Israel being this beacon of democracy, the only democracy in the Middle East. It's an amazing place for queer people. These are the narratives we're taught. And when we actually see with our own eyes how Israel has treated the Palestinian people, both historically during the Nakba and in the occupation, obviously this ongoing genocidal bombardment of Gaza, we realize that actually the opposite is true, that Israeli policies don't align with our Jewish values at all. And that actually to be Jewish in this moment, to fight for our Jewish values, means fighting for the safety and freedom of all people who live in that land, both Jews and Palestinians.
And just adding to what Aaron just said there, Simone, the message time and time shared by the Israeli state is that only Israel is able to keep Jews safe. It's the only safe haven. How then is it possible in the making of this film to lift the veil on some of these, is it fair to call them foundation myths? You know, given how sensitive these narratives are to the Israeli identity.
I mean, I think it's clear in this moment that Israel is actually the most dangerous place in the world to be a Jewish person today. You know, every single day when I open my phone and look at Instagram, I am seeing the myths that I grew up with revealed to be lies, that Israel is the most moral army, that, you know, the Israeli army is the most moral army in the world, that they are not harming civilians. Every single day, the reality that young people are seeing live streamed to our phones just absolutely demolishes those myths. The Israeli military's conduct in the Gaza Strip right now just demolishes every single one of those myths that we were raised on.
I just want to drill down into the idea of the prominence, the awe, the unquestioning support for the Israeli military, which really, really came out in the film. Because one of the quotes attributed to the first female prime minister of Israel, Golda Meir, but it's often paraphrased by Benjamin Netanyahu, is this: if the Arabs put down their weapons today, there'll be no more violence. If the Jews put down their weapons today, there will be no more Israel. Something explored in the film was that state of perpetual readiness by the Israeli army that has led in many ways to the glorification of the IDF. I just wonder, in the context of what's happening in Gaza, whether that's been seen to explain some of the military activities carried out by the Israeli army in Gaza.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a tragedy of Jewish history that this idea that to live by the sword in this, you know, fortified, militarized nation state has been sold as a path to safety for so many of our people, when we can see that, you know, of course the most endangered people right now are the Palestinian people of Gaza, but Israeli Jews are also not safer right now in this situation in which they live in a country that's committing a genocide and that is inflaming tensions with the entire region. I mean, in what world are Israeli Jews or anyone else made safer? And, you know, I'm really grateful for organizations like Breaking the Silence, who have who are former testifiers from the IDF who speak about, you know, every single red line that they cross in terms of their own morality when they're told that they're going to, you know, fight for a battle for the safety of their country, and every day witness that what that actually means in real time is humiliating and degrading the daily existence of another people, making everyday life in their villages, you know, across the occupied West Bank, living hell, feeling like soldiers are watching you at all times. And of course today, you know, I mean, the reports that we're seeing coming out of Gaza are just, once again, there are no red lines.
Aaron, what if I could turn to you and ask you about the time frame in which this documentary was made, because it was started long before the events surrounding October the 7th. I just wonder, with hindsight, whether As a filmmaker, perhaps you could have gone further in drilling down into the suffering of Palestinians to really shine a light on some very dark places for an Israeli audience.
Yeah, so our film was began in 2016 and took about 7 years to produce. Initially, we were a very small production team, just my co-director and myself. We eventually got some really amazing producers, both Palestinian and British Jewish producers. And yeah, it was a really tricky balance because our film is really about American Jewish transformation. So obviously the primary protagonists are Jewish, but we transform and that transformation occurs because of contact with Palestinian society and Palestinian stories. So Palestinians are obviously very prominent in the film, but because the main story is on American Jewish transformation, it was a tricky balance. We really wanted to, in a relatively short period of time, try to convey what Palestinian life is actually like under military rule, what it's like to live your entire life in a walled-off city in which an 18-year-old Israeli soldier has complete control over whether you can enter or exit where you live. But yeah, you know, it was a tricky call, and we didn't end up having a massive amount of time. We wanted to make a really digestible film. So we definitely could have done more to show kind of the horrors that Palestinians go through. We could have done more to show what Gazans are going through. There is a section of the film on Gaza, but in hindsight, we would have actually covered Gaza even more.
Has the timing in which this film been released taken on a whole new dimension, a whole new meaning, significance for the film, do you think?
Yeah, you know, it came out in February 2023, so a number of months before October 7th, but we had just announced our first kind of major tour and released our trailer only weeks before October 7th, so it was kind of in the milieu, both for people who were looking for resources to learn about the context of what was happening, as well as for people who were trying to cancel pro-Palestinian and progressive Jewish speech, so it kind of became a lightning rod in that way. And I think also the film kind of resonates to a certain extent because many of the phenomenon that we cover in the film have accelerated dramatically since October 7th, especially the phenomenon of labeling any criticism of Israel, even if it's being done by Jews, as inherently anti-Semitic, even if it's talking about basic facts of reality. And also the other phenomenon that has expanded quite dramatically is, again, this massive movement of diaspora Jews across the world saying, not in my name, and saying that we are proudly Jewish, we stand by and with our history and with our ancestors, but what we're seeing is not Judaism.
Tell us about the attempts to cancel showings of the film.
There's been many. After October 7th especially, I think a lot of pro-Israel people were looking for something to do and looking for ways to, again, you know, fight what they saw as anti-Semitism. And a number of right-wing activists kind of began targeting our film, and a number of massive email campaigns started telling universities and film venues to cancel our film, saying that our film was dangerous to Jewish people, that it was anti-Semitic, even though in most cases, it was Jewish activist groups or Jewish leaders, including Israeli activists and leaders, bringing our films to venues or to campuses. So it's very ironic that under the guise of protecting Jews, they were censoring progressive Jewish voices. But when universities or venues attempted to cancel our screenings, it was really incredible that both Jewish activists and Palestinian activists said, absolutely not. We are going to show this film no matter what. So we've had virtually no successful cancellations. We've been able to essentially reverse all of them because of progressive Jews saying, look, this is my story. This is literally the story of my life. And Palestinians also saying, you know, how dare you censor, you know, critically important Palestinian and progressive Jewish voices in this moment that are providing context.
I hear from college students all around the country who are, as Aaron said, you know, bringing the film to campus, allowing them, you know, giving them a tool to have these conversations about what is the context that I was missing before, you know, to help them make sense of this moment, because part of what the film is showing is that, you know, there was both a context of deep oppression and injustice that existed before October 7th, and also that there have been, you know, these debates and these rising movements of young Jews criticizing the Israeli government for years and for decades. So, yeah, it's been just really tremendously meaningful to, again, offer people a tool through personal experience and personal narrative to then think about their own transformations. And, you know, that's what a university campus should be about. It's because of my experience on my college campus that I was able to undergo the journey that I went through. I remember when I was a college student that at first there were certain things I heard that made me feel very uncomfortable. Even, I might have said at the time, unsafe. I was really passionately pro-Israel, and there were a lot of parts of that worldview that I had never questioned or interrogated. And it took me a long time of hearing these stories, testimonies from Palestinian students that really did not comport with this rosy narrative that I had of Israel, where I was forced to, you know, ask questions. I remember, you know, a conversation I once had with a grad student who was actually an Israeli anti-Zionist Jew, and he said to me, I said, you know, when you use words like apartheid and ethnic cleansing, they make me really uncomfortable. I feel like you're attacking Israel. And he then explained to me that the words ethnic cleansing and apartheid are actually terms that have, you know, legal and historical meanings that accurately describe things that were happening on the ground. And, you know, that totally disarmed me because, again, I was taught this like deeply anti-intellectual posture to kind of like dismiss these facts and these realities that are really happening on the ground. So I think the first thing is it's important to say that, you know, activism is not meant to be comfortable. Oppression is not comfortable. And for many people, that, you know, being confronted might not initially change them in that moment, but activism over time can force people to face things that they don't want to face and can lead to transformations. The other thing I want to say is that an American college campus, or sorry, a university campus anywhere, should be a place of learning. And it's so deeply concerning to me that we've seen, you know, administrators both in the U.S. and in other places who are caving to this pressure to censor pro-Palestinian activism and like spaces to actually learn, because that is what a university is supposed to be about. And we're seeing in the U.S., I can speak to this specifically, we're seeing the way that pro-Israel groups are finding alliances, building alliances with some of the most, you know, racist and anti-democratic forces in America that want to ban not just the teaching of, you know, critical history about Israel-Palestine, but also teaching of critical history about America. And it's such a dangerous precedent that's being set if you, you know, allow the censorship of teaching and activism on this issue. What's to say that there you can't do that on any other issue?
I wonder, Erin, if I can pick up on a really important point that Simone has raised there. And it's about how fractured Jewish opinions are. And one of the things that your film really focused on and achieved is to show the huge divisions, particularly geographically and generationally, most importantly, when it comes to deep-seated views and opinions around the state of Israel. Obviously, your film threw a spotlight on, I mentioned it already, American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC. That just repeats the powerful pro-Zionist Jewish lobby in the US. There is, of course, a tendency outside the Jewish community to forget that there are deep divisions. Tell us more about that.
Totally. Yeah, I think the pro-Israel kind of like right in America has really tried to perpetuate the myth, and has successfully done so for many decades, that we are united on Israel, that American Jews, by large, almost all of us support Israel unconditionally or almost unconditionally. And what's ironic is that that's not true at all. It's the opposite, in fact. We are a deeply polarized and divided community, and that's a much more honest and accurate picture of where the American Jewish community is. Polling from 2021 that's widely cited on the right and the left shows that amongst all American Jews, about 25% think Israel is an apartheid state, is committing the crime of apartheid. When you go to younger Jews, it's about 40%. About 40% of Jews under 40 think Israel is committing the crime of apartheid. And apartheid is a very strong word, I think a very accurate word. But if 40% of young Jews think Israel's an apartheid state, I think we're probably already at the point where 50% of young American Jews realize something is deeply wrong with how Israel has treated the Palestinian people, both historically and in the present moment. So I do think that we might actually be the majority of young American Jews already. We are still the minority amongst all Jews. But I think, again, what we're trying to also do is help actually paint a much more honest and accurate picture of our community, which is one that is not united, but actually the opposite, incredibly divided and incredibly polarized over this issue.
Turning to you, Simone, do you think your findings will put Jews outside Israel off from ever wanting to live there? Challenging question, but Benjamin Netanyahu has often suggested that one of the biggest existential threats to the state of Israel may be not Hamas, not Islamic Jihad, not Iran, not Arab states surrounding Israel, but a reluctance by young Jews not to want to go there.
I mean, it's, you know, we've seen time and time again pro-Israel organizations and individuals actually admitting that what they see as one of the biggest threats are, you know, critical Jewish voices. We saw in the last election cycle, you know, AIPAC poured millions of dollars into defeating Andy Levin, a former synagogue president, you know, very active Jewish leader in Detroit, Michigan, because of his relationship with Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib. And so I think what that speaks to me is that there is a deep hostility to the idea that Jews can coexist in multiracial democracies and coalitions. And part of what is so scary to me as a Jewish person in this moment is the way that pro-Israel politics often set Jewish communities apart from people who could be our natural allies. You know, in this moment, we're seeing all around the world the actions of the Israeli military inflaming not only anti-Semitism, but also inflaming, you know, Islamophobia and anti-Arab racism around the world. And people around the world, we should be committed to taking those issues on together, seeing that Jews and Muslims being attacked in the streets anywhere in the world right now is a threat to the safety of all of our societies. And this is also part of why it's so important to us to publicly challenge this conflation of all Jews with the state of Israel. You know, that's why it's so concerning to me that President Biden repeatedly says that without Israel, there's not a Jew in the world who is safe. American Jews should be safe because we're Americans. It's the job of the American president to protect all people in the country that we live in, not to be sending bombs and guns to a foreign military across the world.
Let's drill into that a little bit more, if you don't mind, because a fierce debate is happening here in the UK at the moment as to whether or not the UK should stop sending arms to Israel. We know that Spain, the Netherlands, that Belgium and Canada have stopped handing over arms. The US, though, continues to send billions of dollars in weapons to Israel. So too does Germany. Does that make the world a safer place or a more dangerous place for Jews?
Absolutely a more dangerous place for Jews. You know, I recently heard there's a Talmudic passage. It's like a saying from the rabbis who said that, you know, love without accountability is not real love. And, you know, I just wish that more people in our community would investigate that idea. What is this notion of love for a place with no accountability? Right now, we should all be yearning desperately for the Israeli military and the Israeli government to be held accountable for these, you know, crimes that are being committed against the Palestinian people. A world in which any government, any military can massacre people at this scale, demolish entire cities at this scale, show such callous disregard for human life, and there to be no consequences, that should terrify all of us, the world, the precedent that is being created by this government being allowed to act in this way. And on top of that, to say that all of these horrors are being committed in the name of safety for our people, for Jewish people, I so deeply believe that that endangers Jews around the world, associating us with this absolutely reckless, you know, untethered government that is showing such callous disregard for human life.
Now, I know that both of you have made enemies as a result of this film. I mean, you've both been called anti-Semitic, although you're both Jewish. And then there's that slur that you repeated multiple times in the film, self-hating Jew. Erin, I wonder if I can start by asking you, what is it like to be called a self-hating Jew?
I mean, luckily for us, we know how absurd and ridiculous it is. Again, my family fled violent anti-Semitism. My family has a long history of pride in our Jewish faith and our Jewish history and in fighting for social justice in America and other countries in which my family has lived. So I think it just shows that, you know, the pro-Israel right is not actually willing to engage with the material that our film talks about and that the movements that our film covers actually, you know, talk about. What they're more interested in doing is totally trying to delegitimize us, pretending that we're either, again, self-hating Jews or not really Jews at all. And by doing that, by trying to delegitimize us so fully, they're basically saying, that's all we have to fight against you. They don't actually have good arguments against what we're talking about. So they treat us with slurs, they call us names. And we knew that would happen when we made this film.
It never gets less painful to be told, you know, that you're a traitor to your own people. I can just say that, you know, it's because I was raised in a community in which, you know, deep intellectual inquiry and critical education was prioritized that when I learned these things about Israel, I kept wanting to learn more. And I got in, wanted to be part of these, you know, rigorous and critical exploratory conversations about what all this meant. And I'm sorry that it's inconvenient to some people that, you know, the conclusions that I've come to didn't fit with the political views that they wanted me to have.
Towards the end of the film, I think it's fair to say there was an attempt at healing. We witnessed a Jewish rabbi in a therapeutic circle almost, talking to other Jews, sharing what it is like to feel like an outsider. Do you feel that these are opinions, are fringe opinions? Are they left field or are they mainstream? Simone.
I mean, these are opinions that have been pushed to the fringes of our community. There have been very active attempts, as we've already talked about, to, you know, smear anybody who dares to criticize the Israeli government, to stand with Palestinians as a traitor, as inauthentically Jewish, as self-hating. But we also know, as Aaron mentioned, from polling, from the movements in the streets, we see these movements growing. We see Jews out in the streets, you know, calling for a ceasefire in Gaza, calling for Palestinian freedom, both because of our Jewish values and because of our commitment to our own community. We're doing it because we see that as also part of the way to fight anti-Semitism, to break this public perception that the horrors that we're seeing in Gaza are being done in our names. And every single day, that movement is growing as more and more people are facing the horrors that are being committed by Israel, the reality of what this country has become, and are speaking out and are joining the movement.
Before we go, I want to ask one question to both of you, and it's this. Erin, I wonder if I can start with you. I want to ask you, in the process of making this film, whether there is anything that you've seen, experienced, that you could be hopeful about?
I think I'm hopeful because of the massive movement of American Jews and diaspora Jews who are fighting for justice, both where they live as well as in Israel-Palestine. I'm incredibly inspired also by the incredible solidarity and the growing movements of both Jews and Palestinians working together across the world who are fighting for safety and freedom for all people between the river and the sea. This is not going to be easy. Again, you know, the first thing we need obviously is a ceasefire, but also again, I'm also incredibly encouraged by polling we're seeing about who wants a ceasefire. Again, you know, right-wing pro-Israel orgs in America have even said calling for a ceasefire is anti-Semitic. Polling shows over a majority of American Jews, over 50%, want a ceasefire. Only about a third of American Jews want the war to continue. So even though the larger pro-Israel organizations claim to represent us, their claim on leadership is going away. And people are beginning to realize that they actually do not represent mainstream American Jewish communities, and that mainstream American Jewish communities are progressive. We do support social justice. We do support equal rights, both where we live as well as in Israel-Palestine.
And Simone, do you share those hopes?
I think for me, I'm taking a lot of hope from being in this growing movement, from seeing people who are speaking out, seeing people taking action for the first time, taking risks that they've never taken before, confronting their communities, confronting the institutions around them. And we can only hope that there will be accountability for these crimes and the opportunity to rebuild.
Simone Zimmerman, Erin Axelman, thank you for talking to Al Jazeera.
Thank you so much. Awesome.